right. His Tinder account.
Maybe not.
All right, let's jump into it. This is the Film Rescue Show. This is the show with the biggest ego. We are rewriting all of Hollywood's mistakes in our own form and fashion as we see fit. Today, I'm joined by Devin in California. Devin, how's sunny? Are you in San Diego? Where are you right now? Went north.
Well, I'm still stuck in San Diego, having some vehicle troubles, but currently completely overcast here, so exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to be.
You're letting us down, California. Also, for the first time, we're joined in the studio by Michael Spielman.
I'm here. Is that why you said the biggest ego is because I'm here and I have the biggest ego of everyone in the world combined into one?
This is how I know you don't listen to the podcast because I introduce it this way every time. Ego.
Why would I listen to the podcast? I just skipped to
You're
the best part.
You're in it.
Oh, I just skipped to the best part, which is mine.
We also have a guest today phoning in from, I don't know, what's the weather like in Scotland right now, Chris?
It's actually sunny for once here in Scotland. So, yeah, we're beating California.
What a
that, California.
How is it overcast in California and sunny in Scotland?
Yeah, that's not right.
If this isn't proof of climate change, I don't know what is.
Whoa.
Not a political podcast. Today, we will be vigorously fixing, and by vigorously, I just mean we have a lot of points. It's a pretty good movie overall. Doctor Strange, directed by Scott Derrickson, starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
I love the cucumber batch.
I was gonna do one of the name jokes, and if I ever meet him, I'd feel bad about it, so I decided
actually,
not to.
Actually, he really appreciates this, apparently. That's he did an IGN bit with it, and he loves it. Yeah.
All right, Chris, why'd you pick this movie, man?
So I picked this movie because I'm a big fan of all the Marvel movies. But this movie kind of, I think it's a good movie, but it's kind of the top half of, it's the top of the bottom half of the movies for me. I think there's just like a couple of little things. If they had just tweaked it a little bit, then it could have been one of the great Marvel movies up in the top half.
What's the bottom of the top half for you then?
Maybe the newest Spider-Man movie that just came out last week. Yeah. So yeah. Around about there.
Someone in the studios really, really loves that Spider-Man movie. That's me.
I haven't seen it yet. I think I'm seeing it tonight, yeah. Finally. Although, thanks to Twitter, it's been ruined for me.
Oh, no.
The post-credit scene was ruined for me. I'm happy about it. I'm happy. I'm not gonna say what it is on the podcast, just in case somebody hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I'm happy about it. I just am sad that I didn't get to experience it firsthand. Anyone who has seen it knows what I'm being cryptic about, I guess. It's in the post-credit scene.
Yeah.
You sent us a lengthy email.
Yes. Yeah,
and by lengthy, I'm very happy about it.
Talks about how he hates the show. Oh, I can rescue this movie.
My favorite, I might actually steal this for like setups in the future. The way you laid your email out was grievances and rescues. And I love the idea of a grievance. It's not like really a complaint.
No,
it's a perfect word choice. I really like it.
It's just like polite way of this is bad.
Yeah, that's my polite Britishness.
Right, and no, that's great because like that's what we're not here to shit on movies. That's not the point of the podcast.
Oh, I wasn't the first one to swear.
I'll bleep that one out. But I want to jump into the first one just because of the way you titled it. Grievance number one, Diet Iron Man.
Yeah. So much.
Yeah. So that is, yeah, that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Is that a Coke campaign? I don't know about what
yeah,
is that.
Yeah. Maybe that's a British thing. So over here it's called Diet Coke. Is like the no sugar version. What do you call that in America?
No, we have that. We also have Coke Zero.
Yeah. Yeah, we have Diet Coke and Coke Zero.
Okay, yeah, maybe it's
they had to make two because Americans are stupid, so they had to be like, this one has zero sugar, idiots, so drink this one too.
Yeah, so we have that. Yeah, so that name kind of says it all. I think this movie, its kind of biggest flaw is that it's kind of very similar to the first Iron Man movie.
Sure.
In a way that it's like, when I saw it at first, I thought, oh, maybe this is maybe Marvel's kind of going to start, you know, rehashing everything again.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just retread phase one.
Yeah. And I think the characters are quite similar. You know, Tony Stark and Stephen Strange are quite... They got similar personalities. Yeah. They got similar facial hair. So it's all quite similar.
Yeah, it's hard for them because I think they were caught in a weird spectrum with this one. This was my one counterpoint to your Diet Iron Man is, you know, they actually followed his origin pretty well from the comics. And I was trying to think of movies that have deviated adversely from that.
Yeah.
That were successful, and I can't think of a good one that would work. That's why your rescue for it is absolutely magnificent, because you're not trying to change the origin, you're trying to change a certain piece of it, and I think that's what helps make your grievance a better resolution than, oh, well, he's died Iron Man, so you got to change it. I like the way that you word that, as because there's a lot of those typecasts with Marvel where they were very similar to each other when it came to their creation. So
all the kind of origin stories are going to be similar to a certain degree.
Exactly. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm putting the cart before the horse. Devin.
Yeah.
What did you enjoy about this movie? We'll start off on the things we thought it really nailed. I know you outlined a couple of them, Chris, in your email. I'm curious as to what Devin gleaned from this movie.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't rewatch this, so I haven't seen it since I first saw it in theaters.
I
don't know. It's one of those movies that the further I got away from it, the less I remembered stuff.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, obviously the scene with Dormammu is great. Dormammu.
Dormammu, yep.
Yeah, Dormammu. What's the actor's name? I think
Mads Mikkelsen?
No. Benedict Wong. Cumberbatch.
Benedict Wong.
Oh,
yeah.
There's two Benedicts in this movie.
Yes. His character was amazing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, overall, it was one of those movies that, like, I could say a lot of good things about it. I feel like they did a good job on special effects. You know, it was pretty good. Yeah. But it's kind of that area where, like, I don't know that any single part of it really shines for me.
That's kind of like a carrying thing in the Marvel universe for me, where it's like all the movies are good. I even rewatched Thor: Dark World a couple weeks ago, and like,
that's the worst one.
It's fine though. There's just nothing. There's nothing standout in it. As far as movies go, it's fine. Like I couldn't.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It had a lot of shared DNA with like the old Superman movies, the later Christopher Reeves ones, like 3 and 4. It had a lot like in the campiness.
They're also not good examples.
Well, they're beloved.
I mean, they're good examples of what Thor: Dark World is, which is a piece of crap, but
they're beloved movies, Michael.
Yeah.
So rewatching it the most recently for me, the things that really stood out to me were, and I brought it up to you while we were watching it, every single main cast member is able to, like, double the gravity of their goofy lines in a way that I was like, oh, shit, the world's gonna end.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that is the problem with this movie is they had to find... Benedict Cumberbatch is such a incredible actor.
Yeah.
And they were like, we got to get people to match him. Okay, let's get Chiwetel Ejiofor. Let's get Mads Mikkelsen. It's like, oh my God, we need to cast someone for the Ancient One. They're like, Tilda Swinton.
Right.
It's man, that is some star power.
It's stacked out.
Incredible acting.
Yeah.
And Benedict Wong came out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting him to be able to fit so well into that movie.
Yeah.
As he did. And that to me is why, and I think even one of Chris's issues, which is Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
Incredible actress. But again, there are tiers to acting.
Yeah.
She is not on that same tier.
And we'll get into like how a couple characters were misused. We mentioned your Diet Iron Man grievance. I love your rescue for it,
oh
though,
God,
Chris. Tell the world. This is probably the biggest change of the movie.
Yes.
I love it, and I'll let you take it away.
Okay, so my rescue for that, to try and make the film, less feel like Iron Man, would be to set it in the 60s, and maybe specifically 1967, which was the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can, because the character, like the comic book, first came out in the 60s, and you know, it's very it's very psychedelic. And I just think that's like a huge missed opportunity, like more than any other superhero. Doctor Strange is kind of, he's all about the 60s. So it seems crazy that they set it in the modern day.
Yeah.
And I think there's like an outside aspect to this that I really like of, imagine Doctor Strange's personality and character bouncing off of personalities from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
As compared to like the more logical, more straightforward people of now, if he had to like function as this very logical, very like he's so like directly driven, I would love to see him bounce off of 60s characters.
Yeah, because as well his character, so he would start out, you know, he's a surgeon, so he would be, you know, a square in the 60s,
right. Exactly.
And then he goes into this world of mysticism and hippies and everything like that. So it's a much bigger journey for him.
And this is a side character that I thought was a little misused. Michael Stuhlbarg's character, Dr. Stuhlbarg. Nick. He was the other surgeon. Him in a 60s setting, I'm so on board for.
He could nail this.
He would be so much fun.
But see, there was another piece to your rescue that I really liked, especially with that 60s setting. Setting it in 1967 was just a perfect piece. And then I started to think about the other part of that, if you want to tell us about what else you had done.
Yeah, so the other thing I would maybe do as well, so if we're setting it in 67, the Summer of Love, then I would also move the earlier scenes from New York to San Francisco. You know, which was like the epicenter of that hippie culture.
Right.
Yep. And then when I saw that, and I saw the year, I started thinking about other stuff that we could do to kind of advance the story a little bit more and kind of bring in the darkness theme, and that is the Zodiac Killer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just started thinking about this like a couple hours ago, which is 1967. He's a surgeon, the Zodiac Killer, and we can have it so that he's kind of accidentally put into this mystical world because of the Zodiac Killer is not a killer, he's a servant of Dormammu.
Hmm.
Ooh, nice.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, at first, I was negatively analyzing it, and I was like, no, can't do that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait a minute, 67, San Francisco, Zodiac Killer. Ooh, we could tie that back to Dormammu. And then I think his setting is a perfect rescue, and again, it reinforces something else that you bring up later, one of your grievances with your rescue, and that's where I think I got the Zodiac thing from, is because then we could, I'm telling you, I'm gonna blow this thing away. I think way too much about movies because I live a sad life.
Yeah, and it does, and you brought this up in the email too. Having him learn about camaraderie and mysticism from hippies makes way more sense than some random guy that was healed and he meets at a basketball game in New York.
Yeah, so who is that? Is it Benjamin Bratt is the actor?
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor, he's just some random guy in the movie. Whereas I think you make that a hippie girl or something like that. And,
sure.
You know, I just think that it makes way more sense for it to be a hippie telling him about Carmitage than it does just some guy on a basketball court.
Random dude, bro.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, bro, you ever heard of Carmitage? Yo, bro, you got to go to Thailand. You got to do all this stuff. It was okay, bro. I couldn't surf.
Devin, if we're moving the Marvel universe into the 60s, what are some things you'd like to see Marvel do with that time period, those settings, that aesthetic?
I think if you're going to do that, you got to take the opportunity to have the ridiculous costumes somehow, some way.
Oh, yeah. I was a little sad the yellow gloves don't pop up until the after credits sequence.
Yeah, just like definitely lean hard into that, especially with like all the hippie themes and stuff. Man, I'm trying to think what else I would want to see from that
bump
era.
Bump that wardrobe budget up. Hold on, I'm the perfect person for that.
Yeah. For what?
Perfect person to be the wardrobe. The person who did the wardrobe of the actual Zodiac movie.
Oh,
nailed that aesthetic.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They would be
also perfect for that. Starring Robert Downey Jr. That's weird. Yeah. Does the Zodiac Killer exist in the MCU? That's a good question.
Yes, no. I'm telling you, I'm.
You know, the other thing that I, as I'm thinking about it, would kind of be great, and I don't know how it would play for Strange's character, but obviously the language of the time was very different, right? And then we know that if we do this, at some point Strange's going to have to come to the future. So to have him be like fully, not in like the hippie language, obviously, because he's outside of that, but just the sort of the nuance of the time. And then I'm just thinking how that would bounce off in the future when you bring him to like a modern era.
Yeah.
You know, because they did it a little with Cap, but I feel like they missed an opportunity with Cap for a lot. There are a lot of like comedic moments.
Yeah. He never let out like a gee willikers or anything like that.
And watch your language.
Language.
Yeah. But I mean, I think for me those would be big, you know, kind of fun things to see that you wouldn't really get an opportunity to do otherwise.
Right.
Yeah. I can't help thinking that maybe at one point they were planning the movie to be in the 60s, but they decided not to do that because Cap had already. They already had the person out of, you know, the character out of time. And, you know, I can see why they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's a fear thing with Marvel. Marvel's very meticulous about the way that they move. Like, DC throws caution to the wind with so much stuff, but Marvel is very meticulous about their moves because they're thinking about the end result of the phase that they're in.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're very careful.
But then they just looped back around on it in Endgame. Like, you could have made Howard Stark a side character in the in a 1960s Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
You could have made you bring up Ant-Man I think a little later on in the email with the Quantum Realm stuff.
Hank would have been perfect.
Hank Pym could have been the person he goes to. He could have been an in to be like, "Hey, help explain multiverse quantum theory to me because I'm seeing it from a different angle right now,
especially
bro."
Especially tying in that San Francisco aspect with Hank.
Right.
Yeah.
So it.
Oh yeah, they're in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah, that was why I did that as well.
His thing
that's
perfect. His thing is brilliant.
I'm about to like kiss your feet.
I tried to rip this thing apart, so I went hard on that thing.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, we're just gonna like throw ideas at the points you made because you've basically laid out your fix.
Yeah.
I know we've got some ideas to crank out with you to bounce off of you as well. Let's go into your next grievance because I just brought it up briefly: the Dark Dimension versus the Quantum Realm. In the email, you bring up that you love the Ant-Man movies in the Quantum Realm, and there's no direct reference. And I like your idea of like being overt, like, this is separate and a thing, and then the Dark Realm is separate and a thing, and like kind of giving us maybe a thumbprint of each world as they become options.
Yeah.
In the Marvel multiverse.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just on that, yeah. So one of the things about moving the setting to San Francisco was I think you can tie this movie into the Ant-Man movies much better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this movie is all around the Dark Dimension. The Ant-Man movies are all around the Quantum Realm. But I kind of feel like the two things are quite similar. You know, we see it later in Infinity War that Ant-Man's been trapped in the Quantum Realm for 5 years, but he hasn't really aged. And in this movie, you know, they're drawing on the power from Dark Dimension to stop the Ancient One
aging.
So they're kind of, they seem like they're almost the same thing. So my rescue or my change to the movie would just be to just make them the same thing. It just seems silly to have two things that are almost the same be different. And I think they could do that really easily just by having the Ancient One just say, you know, call it the Dark Dimension, call it the Quantum Realm, you know, whatever, you know, call it whatever, you know. There's a bit where she's talking about MRI scans and chakras all being the same thing,
right,
you know. So yeah, you could easily fit that in there as well, and it would just be a little nod to tie those kind of two movies together a bit more.
Right. Yeah, I especially if we're pulling Hank Pym in, I could totally see a line where, he's bringing up multiverse stuff, and Hank Pym's like, yeah, I mean, the quantum reality definitely probably exists. And then when he brings up Dormammu and Dark Realm stuff, Hank Pym go, that sounds, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to tell you there. And given, an air of mystery along with, multiverse, dark dimension, quantum realm, they're kind of like sitting outside of the Marvel Universe right now in a way that we're just about to tap into them and then get an idea that, you know, maybe there's like pockets, and because that's a big thing, pocket universes.
Yeah, this was one of
the comics.
This was one of the very few grievances he had where I was actually able to find reasoning why not to change it too much, but still change it. I agree a little bit with the change. But the problem is that we're talking about a dimension versus a reality, which in the Marvel Universe is very, very different with them. Mm. And so it's very hard for her to say something along the lines of dimension and realm, because then you're going to tick off your fanboys, because they operate on two different levels, because time does pass differently in the quantum realm. While in the dark dimension, time doesn't really pass at all, from what
exist.
I discovered.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So time doesn't exist in one, and that's the difference between a dimension and a realm.
Because the mirror dimension exists on Earth.
It's existing.
And time passes. Yeah. Whereas when you go to the dark world or into the quantum realm, you're in a new space.
It's this transcendent place. Like the dark dimension, if you're putting it into a way where, think of it as its own character in a sense.
Yeah.
Where it is essentially of the god tier with itself. It's weird.
I think they missed an opportunity to have Doctor Strange have these kinds of questions.
Yes.
And be like, okay, well, what the fuck's the difference between dark dimension and the mirror dimension?
Yeah.
Like, is that not all the same things?
The same thing,
and then have someone explain, mirror dimension, dark realm, dark reality.
If Hank is there, then we have the quantum realm conversation join into this. And he's like, okay, what is this?
Yeah.
So it allows for them to explain themselves a little bit better and how crazy. Like, they threw away three times multiverse conversations. And it took Spider-Man Far From Home, Mysterio mentioning the multiverse for people to be like, there's a multiverse? It's like, technically, that was talked about in Doctor Strange. People, did no one catch that?
2016.
There's an opportunity here, too, to lean into that aspect of any science significantly advanced looks like magic. Could definitely tie all these different seemingly disconnected elements together through that concept and actually utilize that for to Strange's advantage. The reason maybe he grows so quickly and his scientific brain is so advanced.
Yes.
He's able to understand this stuff more easily.
And that's why I think setting in the 60s is perfect for that, because then he could have he's like, oh, well, what if we could use, and it could just be something off. Man, I wish we could use lasers to perform these surgeries. It'd be more precise. Something like that to show that his brain isn't thinking on the 60s level. He's thinking at a 90s, 2000s level because we have that ability to think like that. I mean, it's a throwaway cheap line.
Sure.
But it allows for them to show that Stephen Strange's transcendence in his brain can come across as mystical to a lot of his coworkers. They could call him kind of a magician.
In
a way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's magic. And it's a campy line, but it's something that it just kind of ties that he's attached to mysticism in a way, but in his own way.
Yeah.
Right.
It also
makes
a lot more sense why they would be willing to recruit him in the first place, because I think that's one area I struggled with the original film is he's a very smart man, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of obvious reasons a mystical cult would recruit him, you know.
Is that
they kind of mention it with his photographic memory, but it's just in passing like twice. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's because I have a photographic memory. And he mentions it twice. But again, if this was set in the 60s, that's something that doesn't come up a lot, someone having a photographic memory, so it puts him on a new tier.
Right.
So it transcends commonality.
I'm trying to think, doesn't the Ancient One mention that, like, he was predestined to yes. be the Sorcerer Supreme?
Yeah, she saw that.
And she saw that yeah. through the Time Stone.
Yeah, by the time we get to Endgame, we see that. But, like, yeah. the original movie itself, it feels weird. Like, it feels shoot on. And then yeah. Endgame is like, oh, we have to fix that.
Yeah, why didn't she bring that up in her death monologue of, like, I saw you becoming...
Because it creates a time loop. It creates a different time.
Does it?
Yes. Because she's made him aware of something that he wasn't supposed to be made aware of.
Okay. Yeah, I can accept that. I can accept that.
We're dealing with time. You know what the best line about time is? It's from Looper, when Bruce Willis says to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I don't want to talk about time.
You just pissed off half of Reddit.
it's the perfect, everyone's like, oh, that's so lazy. I'm like, nope, because time and how it's going to react to anything is so beyond anything.
Right.
That understanding it is maddening.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you've got more grievances.
Yeah.
I want to hear them.
I love these grievances.
Okay, the next one is the Ancient One.
Yeah.
I feel bad about this because Tilda Swinton is Scottish, like myself.
It's because you hate women. It's fine.
No, it's no. No, because she's Scottish and she's an amazing actress.
Oh, yeah. Short rabbit hole. Did you see the Suspiria remake?
No. No, I've not seen that.
Oh, boy, you got to watch that.
That is peak Tilda Swinton. She plays three characters?
Three, right. Yeah.
Three characters in that movie. One of them, you don't even know her until the end.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing.
I'll check that out.
He's dying inside because he has to try to recast Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm
not even Scottish, but I'm dying inside too because, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm not really attached to this one, actually. I think I just used this to bulk out my email a little bit. But there's, you know, there was a lot of people before the movie came out, there was a lot of stuff online about them, you know, having changed the Ancient One to a white person, having changed it to a woman. Yeah.
This is
I don't really buy all that stuff, but you know, I can see it was a problem for the movie.
It's a problem with white people.
Well, it's a problem with adapting properties from five
from
decades ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're always going to run into these issues. One of the big issues with Iron Man 3 was like, we go the racist route or do we change things and just make it suck?
No, it just sucks. Yeah. Shane Black sucks.
You're kind of stuck as far as options go with that. So I get the energy of why. I appreciate the effort of making it a female character.
Mm-hmm. The biggest problem with changing the Ancient One is something that I mentioned before. We have Benedict Cumberbatch, we have Chiwetel Ejiofor,
right,
and then of course we have Tilda Swinton, Rachel McAdams, and Benedict Wong comes out of nowhere, and Mads Mikkelsen. We have these levels of actors that are on a new tier, and we have four of them primarily that interact with each other the most.
Yeah.
So to have my counter when you had your rescue was to make it an Indian person. I immediately thought of Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I've never seen her in a movie where she is like put into this incredible acting personality.
Right.
So to see her in that movie along with Benedict Cumberbatch and Chiwetel Ejiofor,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if she can do it. Now, again, this 2016, this is before Baywatch, so maybe it saves her from making that movie.
True.
But at the same time, she was the only counter I had. But my other counter that I came up with was we kept it as a man, and we made it Dev Patel.
Mm. I love Dev
that's
Patel.
That's nice, yeah. He's good. Yeah, that's good as well. Yeah, that is good, actually. I like that.
But again, Tilda Swinton is on her own tier. Like, there's like B, A, C, S, Tilda Swinton.
I've been keeping this one in my back pocket. Casting is like one of my favorite things.
I love casting. Yeah.
Michael and I, like, at random hours, just be like, cast a live action Attack on Titan movie right now. Casting is one of my favorite things. I think I know the Asian Tilda Swinton.
Oh, here we go.
Now, she's never won an Academy Award, but she's won the Hong Kong equivalent, the Hong Kong Film Award. Michelle Yao.
Yes, I was thinking Michelle Yao.
Michelle Yao from Couching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She's the older woman in the amazing fight scene. In case you need to know, could she kick ass in this movie? Oh, yes, she could.
She's in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes, she is. God, so Michelle Yao can do...
Oh, man.
You get both.
She's in isn't she in Guardians 2?
Oh, wait.
I think she might be.
Yeah, I think she is. But, like, as a tiny character.
I think you're fired, Seth.
Right.
Yeah, I think she's, like, a throwaway, which, you know.
Yeah, the problem... I did think about Michelle Yao, but the problem with her is you're recasting a Tibetan character as a Chinese... Is she Chinese?
Right.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I couldn't come up with a name better than Tilda Swinton. And when I rewatched the movie, I actually thought there's no way you could recast this as anyone other than Tilda Swinton. She's so good in it.
No, but it's impossible to recast her. And you're right; she is in Guardians Volume 2. She is one of the old Guardians with like.
That's right. She's one of the Reaver
Alita
captains.
Ogor. She's a Reaver captain.
That means she's coming back.
I mean, she's coming back. But yeah, that's why it's hard because I saw that grievance. I was like, oh man, you mean to tell me I have to try to recast Tilda Swinton?
Yeah.
It's hard. That's like hard. I would have to make another white woman like Meryl Streep or something like that. Like I'd have to make it someone on her tier. And that's hard because, you know, rewatching that movie and you see some of the interactions between her and Benedict and Chiwetel, and you can see that these three are on their own level when it comes to acting. Like there is something special about seeing them in the movies.
Devin, do you remember when we did Death Wish and all the scenes that Bruce Willis shared with what's his name from Law and Order?
You mean
Daredevil's villain.
Yeah. Why can
starts
I
with a V. You have Google. You can.
Why can I not remember his name?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
At the same time. That's why we're married.
Vincent D'Onofrio and Bruce Willis. Like, anytime Vincent D'Onofrio was on screen, he, like, tried really, really hard.
It's like, Bruce, please, for the love of God, act in this movie. Don't just collect a paycheck. Remember Once Upon a Time in Venice, Bruce?
Right.
Get off
That was so bad.
Asshole.
But I feel like that trio, Tilda Swinton, Benedict Cumberbatch, and I'm going to mispronounce his name.
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor. There, thank
you. Years to get that right.
Every time they're on screen together, every single line, I was like, oh my God, you guys are so good at this.
And it pissed me off about the cinematography because there's exchanges between him and Benedict where they keep cut. And I'm like, no, stop. Just put the camera back. Let them act in the scene and not just get up on the faces because I promise you, these two are so good. I mean, 12 Years a Slave showed that Chiwetel doesn't need to have an up close on his face to be incredible. Just let the scene play out. Let the scene play out. Have a triangle of these three talking to each other and just watch, which they do several times. They literally have scenes where the camera's back and they're just walking around talking to each other, and you're just like, yeah, keep talking. Give me more information about the mysticism. Like it's
One of the few movies where I don't mind the monologues. For Mads Mikkelsen to be able to deliver his like villain monologue to Doctor Strange tied up in that machine thing.
Mr. Doctor. Yes, it is strange. Oh my gosh.
He was underutilized. He's so good. While we're on casting and misuse of cast, you have a grievance with Rachel McAdams. I guess not her being in the movie, but
not her personally. I mean, I think she's a good actress, and when I rewatched the film as well, I thought she does well with what she's given, but she's given almost nothing to do.
Exactly.
It's back to that tier thing, you know?
Right.
It's like Rachel McAdams, great actress, but again, when we put her next to everybody else in that movie, she's not close.
Yeah, I think she needs more plot control, you know what I mean? And like something to do to excuse her being in the movie.
So here's my plot device, and because Marvel keeps doing this lately, and I appreciate it. They do it in Spider-Man as well, where they keep referencing back to old stuff. And so I think she is going to end up being Cleo, who is Dormammu's niece.
Okay. This is for
Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah, for the non-comic book reading audience, go into that history a little bit.
Yeah, so essentially Dormammu, before he was essentially trapped in the Dark Dimension, he basically reigned supreme, and he had children, you know, he made some gods, essentially, too, And what that did was they then had children themselves. After he got trapped in the Dark Dimension by the Ancient Ones, not Ancient One.
Ooh.
Yeah, there used to be others, but they all died. He had offspring. Now, a lot of these offsprings have, you know, kind of jumped in together. And, you know, so Cleo is actually very human in her nature. She doesn't even realize who she is. But Dormammu sends her essentially to Earth to trick them into letting him back. And so she's there the whole time, and he's like, oh, I'm just going to utilize this resource to do it. Essentially, Dormammu, for a lot of the uninformed but know a little bit more about DC, is the dark side of this universe.
Yeah.
He loves to just nitpick, try to puppeteer things and move his own little games along so he can come back and take over the Earth, which is, oh, I suspect maybe Rachel McAdams could be that. But again, I won't know until the next movie.
Yeah, yeah. Devin, she's the lead actress in your favorite comedy of 2017.
Wedding Crashers?
Game Night.
Wedding Crashers is every year. Also, yes, Game Night. Because I funny story about Game Night, I drug Seth to see that movie. Because he's like, no, it doesn't look good. I'm like, trust me, it's going to be good. And Seth, it was great.
It was great. I had a wonderful time. I can admit when I'm wrong.
God, that
movie. I was wrong. If Far From Home is the best Spider-Man movie, I'll say it.
Best live action Spider-Man.
Live action Spider-Man.
I gotta keep saying that.
No, okay.
Nothing's better than.
I appreciate that. Devin, if like, there's especially moving into the 60s. If her character is now like a, I like her being an ER doctor still, like a person for the people. She cares about people. Maybe she has like a little injection of the hippie lifestyle. That's her first foot into it. Seeing her interact with Doctor Strange, like what's maybe a B plot or something like that? You could see her kind of heading to. I want to keep her in the movie. I want to keep her around.
I'm not taking her. So take out the Nick character and just have it be Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
Nick is gone.
You mentioned something like that in the email. You diversify elsewhere is the title of that one.
Yeah,
and making her the because you mentioned having a rival surgeon, making her but like a camaraderie
Make
rival.
Her be the rival.
I like that.
Love stories are boring.
Yeah,
that's plain and simple. They really are. They're easy to write. They're cheesy. They're tired. The rivalry aspect, while yes, it is also just as old. You can breathe new life into a rivalry with the respect aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, you can go the Moriarty route, which is it's pure undying hatred for Sherlock, or you can go the Seto Kaiba route from Yu-Gi-Oh! Yes, I like anime, by the way. You can go the set where it's, I hate this guy, but also I respect the fact that I can't ever beat him.
Right.
You can kind of diversify with the way that you attack your rivalry. Well, with love and it's boring and no one likes it. I've been married 13 years, trust me. Love dies, and it's dead. Rivalries are better.
This is getting dark.
Wow.
Chris,
I hate my life.
Chris, bring it back up
bring
real quick.
Well, I don't completely dislike the love interest thing, but I think it would be great to make them the rival surgeons, you know, and so we could lose the Nick character and have them having more of a rivalry. There's a scene as well when he's in Carmitage where he starts writing her an email and then he doesn't send it. But comes like right after he's just learned about astral projection. So it just like he could have used astral projection to go and see how she's getting on.
Yes.
And because it's the 60s now as well, there is no email, you know, and it's so it would have allowed him to show his powers
Makes
a little bit more as well.
Yeah. Makes him closer a little bit too.
Yeah.
What if she was the one that did the surgery on his hands and that's what splits him apart?
That
is that harsh?
That's cold.
Oh, no, that's perfect. No, that adds a new level to it because it creates an animosity between them where he has these it evolves conflicting feelings and character depth, which let's be honest, sometimes Marvel has a problem with.
Right. Okay. I've got an idea here from what we're saying.
I
want to tie back around to like why he would want to go and visit her. What if, so his character path is losing his ego, right? That's the whole, that's the big difference from Tony Stark is Tony Stark ends Iron Man 1 a fucking badass.
It takes so long for him to lose his... It literally takes his... Spoiler alert for any of you schlubs who haven't seen Endgame. It literally takes him about to die.
Right.
For him to lose his ego.
So Doctor Strange's arc is to lose his ego. He literally has to fail to win.
Yeah.
I would like to plant the seed of that with him having an interaction after the astral projection where she says, you know, you need to, like, reevaluate the way you've interacted with people and treated people because you're looking inward and not outward. And having him maybe start to write a letter instead of an email about, like, you know, I understand you did everything you could. I'm coming around. Like, I'm willing to forgive you. But then he wants to make a real effort.
Yeah.
And this is where he astral projects. And I'm going to lead us up to a little cliffhanger here before we go to a break. Because he astral projects to go see her, and it goes well. But he's kind of breaking the rules because he's not supposed to be leaving and using his powers outside of his lessons yet. And on his way back, we start to introduce your next grievance. There needs to be some horror in this movie. Mm-hmm. And he gets pulled into a little pocket dimension.
A time wraith.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about horror and bad guys.
Yeah, sorry, you people who are listening. You get to hear my voice some more.
You suck. I brought a legitimate villain onto the podcast today. Why did I do this?
Yeah, don't say that about Chris just because he's Scottish. That's real mean.
Chris, stick around. I want to go over more of your emails. We're going to take a quick break, and then, when we come back, bad guys and horror. I guess we're going to break to Michael?
I'm going to break to me, baby. I need to be on this podcast more often.
Wow. That one guy sounds like a tool. Oh, wait, that's me, isn't it? Shit! Dr. Strange, wow. Can you believe it? They got my fat ass on that podcast. Whew. Welcome to a magical episode of Michael's Film Whatever. Today I decided I'm going to rank the 8 Harry Potter movies. Only Harry Potter, not Fantastic Beasts. I'll wait till they're all done before I give you that ranking. You're welcome. I don't know. Anyway, let's get down to it. We're starting at the bottom. Chamber of Secrets, Year 2, is the worst Harry Potter movie. Now, it's not saying it's a bad Harry Potter movie. Out of these 8, it is the worst one to me. It feels like it loses a lot of the momentum. The chemistry still isn't fully there. And the charm of the first one doesn't exist. And there are times where the plot feels like it's rushed forward. And they do miss a lot of stuff. 7 is Year 7, Part 1. I think that first part of Deathly Hallows was going to be this low on the list. It had to be. The first part of that book is really slow. It takes a lot to build up to it. So that's the big reason why it's that low. 6 is the first one. Again, there's a lot of bad acting in it, but these kids are young. You know, like, but by the time you get to year 7, hell, by the time you get to year 3, they are killing it. But these aren't bad movies. And year 1, you know, it's just cheesy and kind of, you know, it's a boring book, too. 5, Goblet of Fire. This is when we start to get really difficult, but I gotta give it here because this is when the darkness comes. And Ralph Fiennes kills it as Voldemort. Like, I can't see him in anything else right now without comparing him to Voldemort. The acting is top-notch. Robert Pattinson dies really well. Weird to say. 4 is Order of the Phoenix. Great movie. Amazing movie. Great fight scenes, too. Like, the cinematography in this 5th one had to go up. And it did. It did by a lot. And I think that it shows in the overall presentation of it completely. And it's probably, that's why it's 4. Like I said, these next ones are really difficult. I'm nitpicking. 3 is Year 7, Part 2. The finale is good. I just wish they would have stick to the books more and had him goading him in the middle of the banquet hall. Other than that, the final showdown is really great. The build-up, Harry dealing with it. It shows the acting range of Daniel Radcliffe so well. 2 is Year 3. Wow, that thing is so loyal to that book. Does so well. I think the only problem is, why is everyone's hair so fucking long in that movie? Way too long. And then for me, 1 is Year 6, Half-Blood Prince. This easily could have been the worst book, because there's a lot of backstories in Year 6. and they managed to somehow put a lot of the ones that really mattered in there to understand the motivations. The only qualm is more Tom. But again, this would have been a 3.5 movie. 3.5 hour movie. They could have done two parts of book six for me and I would have been fine. But yeah, so that's my list. If you don't like it, go fuck yourself. Now go back to listen to this gorgeous son of a bitch talked about Doctor Strange and the Zodiac Killer shit. That's fucking dope.
We're back with a guest from Scotland. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Super duper. Thank you so much for, A, just coming on the show, and B, this beautiful email. I'd like to get into the bottom section of this. This is the part I'm most excited for, because I think if I had to pick my biggest letdown, it was the misuse of specifically Mads Mikkelsen. He's a phenomenal actor. One of my favorites. If you've never seen him play Hannibal Lecter on the
God,
Hannibal TV series, that's
so good.
The Chiffre? Yeah. So good. So one of your grievances is the bad guys. And I'll swing this one back to you.
Yeah, the bad guys. I mean, that's a common complaint of
Marvel movies.
All the Marvel movies.
Most.
Let's redo that bit.
Yeah.
It's a common complaint of all the Marvel movies that the bad guys are never really that fleshed out, and certainly true in this movie.
Yeah.
I agree. Mads Mikkelsen he's an amazing actor.
Yeah.
But he's not given enough to do in this movie.
And he makes an impression with the little bit he can do. He's like, Mr. Doctor. It's Strange.
Yes, it is strange. My favorite thing about Mads Mikkelsen is, you know, he's in that new Hideo Kojima game, Death Stranding.
Yeah.
He's been in that trailer like for 20 seconds total. In 20 seconds of that trailer, he showed more villainy, evil, and just downright badassery than the entirety of his time in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I have no idea who the hell he is in this damn... I don't know what this game's about anyway, because it's Hideo Kojima. But Mads Mikkelsen is such an expressive actor.
Yeah.
And it's not just one piece. It's not just his voice. It's not just his inflection. It's not just his posture. It's not just the way that he is. It's every aspect of him. He is like Sir Ian McKellen as well.
Oh, yeah.
He is an expressive actor that is, you know, an idol for a lot of people who want to be an actor.
Sure.
And I feel like he's sold short. I feel like he's sold short.
Yeah. He's definitely not given enough to do.
I think one of my weaknesses with it is his familiarity with Carmitage and the Ancient One. I think I would take that away. I think I would just make him a mindless slave of Dormammu from the beginning, which would add mysticism and a little bit of horror to who Dormammu is, because then you can build up this mystery element behind Dormammu. He's this dark god that wants to blacken the entire universe, and if you follow Marvel instead of whatever the hell they made, his fucking skull is on fire.
Right.
Like
Ghost Rider.
It's you could have these, like, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch has an interaction with Mads Mikkelsen's character. Then he goes to sleep. And in his sleep, he sees the real face of Dormammu, and it's torturing him at night to the point that he's restless. And he gets up, and he has to read all these books because he has to get better, because it's like a driving force.
Mm.
And it's driving him kind of crazy because Dormammu is haunting him and torturing him a bit.
Hmm.
That's one of the things that I would do with
Dormammu. Yeah.
I would shroud Dormammu in more mystery, because then it creates the who the hell Dormammu is.
Right.
It's kind of scary with the way Dormammu is in a lot of it too.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think? How do you want to integrate these bad guys a little more to make them more engaging is a big part of it.
Yeah. I think just what Michael said as well is they've got the director here to do that as well, because they've got Scott Derrickson directing this movie. He's best known for the Sinister movie.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so he's a horror director.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and so the bad guys in this movie are like, they're less scary than the bad guys in Harry Potter. You know, they should be at least equal with Voldemort, you know, and like this director is the guy that could have done it. So I
absolutely agree.
I don't really understand how they managed to not have scary bad guys in this movie.
I think a big part of it with this, and you know, you bring up Harry Potter, part of what makes the villains in Harry Potter so scary is that they seem way more powerful than our protagonists can handle. Yeah. Even though we don't see what they can do, but that mystery is part of what makes them terrifying. But in Strange, we get a very good sense of the capabilities of our villains early on. And we also understand that Strange is going to be at and above that level in a pretty quick fashion. Like, the way the movie's laid out, all of that early on we understand, which removes the horror element. We're no longer in a position of, like, maybe he won't be able to deal with this. So I think that's what you need to reintroduce, yeah, is how, like, that question of how does our protagonist overcome this thing that's so much more powerful than he is.
Yeah, it adds this, yeah, this weird level of...
Yeah, and I think just if they made the bad guys look more badass, sure, as well. You know, like, the eye makeup that Mads, yes, Mikkelsen has is great, but it's like, it's just makeup.
Yep. Right.
But if they had, like, given him actually, like, burning eyes or something, yeah, something like that, that would just show that he was, you know, he was amped up and he had more powers.
So if they follow the comics more, the followers of Dormammu are known as the Mindless Ones, and they kind of have these weird glowing yellow eyes. And so totally reinforces that with you, that they're technically followers, yeah, of Dormammu.
Yeah.
So giving them these frightening characteristics. I mean, the Mindless Ones mainly look like husks, so I wouldn't make them husks, but the eyes. Like, they could have done a, yeah, lot more to make that seem more terrifying. Like, just images of their, you know, when he goes to the Dark Dimension, if we ever have him go to the Dark Dimension, you can see just these piercing eyes around Dormammu, and it's his army of the Mindless Ones that are just around. And it just adds this ominous feeling to what Dormammu stands for. I mean, Dormammu interacts with the dark parts of Marvel. He is darkness. I feel like you are completely right with the lack of horror in this movie. And I mean, I'm looking at this director's credits. I mean, he made, right, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He made a straight-to-video Hellraiser movie. And then, of course, he made Sinister. I mean, this guy knows how to do good horror.
Oh, man. Deliver, yeah, Us From Evil is my favorite movie, oh, of, yeah, his in the list. Yeah. He has, I think, my favorite exorcism scene, yes, on film. The final act.
Yes.
The rest of the movie's okay.
It's okay.
But the exorcism scene in
that. He does that twice.
Ugh.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose also has a great exorcism scene.
Yeah, it does.
Too.
Yeah, it does.
Like, this guy understands possession, which is what technically Dormammu does to the minds of his followers.
Right.
What? You can tell. That's where you can tell Marvel's interference came in a little bit. Marvel's a little bit better about their interference than DC, as in their executives at DC are fucking idiots who need to keep their damn hands off of shit. Don't get me started.
Chris, did you follow this movie before it came out? Were you, like, following the production of it at all?
A little bit. I think I watched that Deliver Us From Evil just because he had already been announced as the director for this.
Yeah.
And I think I watched that movie, and then when I watched Doctor Strange, I thought, is that this, you know, yep, why is that the same guy, and why right, bother hiring that guy if you're just gonna ask him to, exactly, turn in Die Iron Man?
but see, that's why. Like, as soon as I saw, I was just like you. When I saw that he was when he was director, I was like, I gotta watch Sinister now. Yeah. I like Ethan Hawke to begin with.
Sinister
anyway. I watched. I was like, oh, is that what he's gonna do with Doctor Strange? Holy shit! And the problem is that Marvel, unfortunately, being owned by Disney, means that they want to appeal to as many people as they can.
Yeah,
yeah.
So he might have had a script that was like that, except unlike Edgar Wright, he changed it.
Right.
So he might have just been adaptable.
Yeah, I mean, you can take the work you can get.
You can see that Marvel has maybe learned from, like, this movie and maybe some of the others, yes, where they give the directors more freedom.
Yes.
They put more of their personal stamp on things. Mm-hmm. But at this point in the Marvel movies, they were kind of like, they were trying to control it a little bit and make sure it was very Marvel-y.
Yes.
Right.
That's why if I connected Doctor Strange to any other movie, it's Shazam.
I was going to mention the monsters in that before, like, how fitting they would have been in a movie like this.
There are literal parts of that movie where I'm like, this is
horrifying.
Horrifyingly, in an almost graphic way. And I'm like, I'm looking around, my 9-year-old's in there. I'm like, holy shit, I'm a bad father. Why am I doing this? And I'm like, you know, thinking about that and seeing how DC let that happen. If Marvel lets that happen in Doctor Strange 2, because he's also directing that, maybe that'll help it, but I totally agree with you where there should be, they missed something.
Well,
big
and
time.
David F. Sandberg is a horror director, yes. and they just let him do horror in Shazam.
He killed it. Shazam is easily the best DC movie, and I mean that's not saying much, but oh my god, that movie's so good.
So Devin, if we lilt into horror, what is something horrifying you could imagine in an MCU kind of setting? Like other villains that we've written for other MCU movies, usually we try to be more understandable, more relatable, and then have them kind of break. This is like you're starting from evil. What does like legitimately frightening evil look like in a mysticism setting?
I think lack of reason is the, or like seeming lack of reason. The, especially when you're dealing with something like Dormammu, who's so big, out of this world, like kind of separate. The way he would think about things would be so different. And imagine, especially at this point for Strange, his way of dealing with the world is to reason with it, to use logic, to try to like find the purpose behind things. And even though he's shifting over to understand mysticism is maybe something different, to have throughout the entire movie the actions taken by Dormammu's followers make no sense to him and really no sense to the audience, but to cause like real harm, I think would be a good way to introduce a element of horror without having to go too graphic or create something that, you know, like a PG-13 audience wouldn't watch.
Sure. Yeah, Chris, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I like that as well, because if the, you know, if the bad guys have got no reason, well, the end, you know, the ending of Doctor Strange, I think, is great, where he,
I love it.
You know, he's bargaining, so he has to go and reason with him.
I love that it's the only Marvel movie that doesn't end in a fist fight.
Oh, see, and we were talking about that earlier. Like, if you watch that entire movie again, Doctor Strange, technically, it's basically like a 2-3 week passage of time, right? He never technically beats someone with just his mystical abilities. Mm-hmm. It's always his brain that allows him to beat him.
Yeah.
It's so subtle that people don't appreciate it as much as they probably should with the way that it was done.
Yeah. What were you saying, Chris?
I think that as well. You know, his superpower is not even the magic. It's that it's his ability to learn really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought it was really refreshing to see a movie where it doesn't end with like a big CGI punch up.
Right.
But he actually, you know, he uses his logic and his reasoning to resolve the situation.
Yep.
You know, not having to resort to physical violence. There's a bit in the halfway through the movie where he kills one of the the followers
Scott
of Caecilius. You know, and he gets really pissed off that he did that.
Yep.
You know, there's, I think that was a great scene as well.
Oh my gosh.
He's saying, you know. Yeah. I'm a doctor. I'm supposed to save people, not kill them.
Right.
That conversation between him and the Ancient One and Mordo is, again, another reason why those three actors are in this movie. Because there are times where it is chilling. And then, you know, she leaves, and it's just him and Mordo having this incredibly acted scene of an argument.
Right.
And it gives you chills. And it just reinforces those arguments.
Yeah. Too. Well, and then if you re-examine the ending, he doesn't have to kill anybody at the end.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't, when they're going down the street, when he's reversing time, he's bringing people, even the bad guys, back to life.
He finds another way.
Yeah. I love that as an ending, for sure. That's probably, of the things I wouldn't change about this, that's the biggest thing I would not change.
Well, that gives you a good offset, too, if you make the villains just disregard human life entirely.
Yes.
Like, that's how you create the good opposites.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a foil
to
him.
That's
right?
Why at first I was really upset with the way they took Thanos and that he had rationale and the balance. It's like, no, that's not how he is. He just wants to appease a possibly non-existent person known as Death. That's his entire purpose is, I'm going to kill people. I want the Infinity Gauntlet so I can snap half of them away to appease her so that way she'll fall in love with me, even though, spoiler alert, she never will. Because she loves Deadpool, which is still the most hilarious thing in the world.
Comics are weird.
I love it so much, though, because she is obsessed with him, and she doesn't give Thanos the time of day, and it's absolutely hilarious.
Thankfully, they never call him the Mad Titan in the movies.
They do not. They do not.
I think they specifically did that because calling him that makes means you have to make him crazy.
But again, Devin is right. The things that make the like Darkseid is easily one of the greatest villains of all time because he has no reason for being what he is. He just is. Mm. And he is so good. He has leveled himself up so much that he became a god, intricate enough in the system. In the DC universe, you've heard of the Alpha and the Omega, and that's supposed to be God.
Yeah.
In the DC universe, the Alpha is God, and the Omega is Darkseid. That's why his symbol is the Omega.
Huh.
He is omnipotently bad. He is bad to be bad, and then he realizes that there are just these good people and a strong person named Kal-El on Earth. Oh, I'm just going to fuck with him and try to kill him. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
And that's Dormammu. Dormammu is the same way. He's like, okay, well, some asshole locked me away in here, and now I can't get to Earth. I got to get to Earth.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to destroy these things. I got to take over this dimension. This dimension is mine, and I'm going to have it. And I don't care how I have to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill, manipulate what I can. And that is what he is. And then they just – they might get to that, though. That's the
– yeah.
Endgame and even Far From Home have really made me not trust the here and now with Marvel movies.
Sure.
Because – I didn't realize just how deep the planning was, and you know, Chris has seen Far From Home, so he knows how deep that planning was into some of those scenes with the reveal in Far From Home.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, holy shit, where did you start thinking about some of the stuff?
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to completely say that maybe that's not going to happen with Dormammu. It's the same thing with Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
Maybe at some point it comes back around. But I do think that they could have utilized Dormammu in a more horror setting. He is absolutely terrifying. He can possess and manipulate easily. Like, that's what he does to Mordo. Spoiler alert. Hopefully it doesn't. I don't know if they're going to do that. Because I think that they casted the way that they use Mordo wrong. Because Mordo is supposed to eventually become a being of Dormammu.
Yeah.
And I don't see the motivation going that way with the way that they made this movie.
Yeah, I want to see more of Dormammu as well, because I think like he wasn't in the first movie enough.
Yeah,
like he appears at the end, and you know, it's a great scene.
Yes,
but like you don't really know who that character is.
But it leads back to your passage of time with Dormammu too, and that's why it's so perfect.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask this to you as a question before we set up the idea, Chris and Devin, based on that scene where Doctor Strange goes into the Dark Realm.
Dormammu!
Up to the point...
I'm here to bargain.
Right. Up to the point where he leaves the Dark Realm. How long do you think he was in there?
My favorite part of that scene is he's like, I can do this forever. And he's like, then you will burn for eternity. 20 minutes, like not even 20 times later. He's like, all right, you know what? What do you want? And it's like, okay, that doesn't seem... Like, it insults the resolve of Dormammu.
Yeah, so
It seems like it's a long time, doesn't it?
So,
and it's
go ahead.
It's seconds.
Yeah, and the same in Infinity War, he like travels forward in time and sees things like 14 million times. Mm-hmm. So, like this character, he has lived, you know, multiple countless lifetimes lives. Over.
Right.
You know, and they need to bring that out more in the character that he's. Yeah.
Okay.
He's extremely old, you know.
I'm glad you said that, because that was part of what we wanted to bring up as a possible ending for the movie,
yes.
Which is going full Man Out of Time. The in the 60s, the Dark Realm closes. Mads Mikkelsen and his cohorts get sucked in, and then it's just Baron
Mordo,
Mordo and Wong
standing there
trying to figure out, like, oh, he closed it. How did he do that? And then Doctor Strange emerges in the current Avengers timeline.
2016,
I like that.
Having become the Sorcerer Supreme.
And see, what it does to that is that that helps Mordo's development. Because all Mordo sees is him go talk to Dormammu. Then out of nowhere, he doesn't come back. Everything's fixed. And they're left there alone with Strange nowhere to be found.
Right.
And what it does is it causes this animosity to grow within Mordo, which would then make him maybe think that, wait a minute, maybe Dormammu, maybe it was right.
Right.
Maybe Dormammu is the answer.
And then he taps into the Dark Realm to keep himself young,
and then so
the same way the Ancient One did.
Yep.
So then you don't have, like, he's not going to be a 70-year-old man by the time he meets back up with Doctor Strange.
Yep.
They're both young, and that's going to be, like, the first indicator of, like, What have you been doing since I've been gone?
And then it's
when you
like,
get to a sequel.
And but that could be the after credit scene. The after credit scene that's there now is him with that stupid basketball dude and taking back the magic, and that's so dumb. It could be him showing up to Strange.
Right.
Not being older. And then Strange is, oh, come in. We have a lot to catch up on. And then as he turns, you see the symbol appear on his head and then go away. So it shows that Mordo is under the control of Dormammu now. And it adds, again, a bit of unresolved horror to that scene as to what the hell is going on.
Yeah, it's ending it like a horror movie where the monster always pops back out at the end, right?
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I think as well, you know, maybe in that 50 years that have passed, maybe Mordo was the... was the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yes.
But now that Strange is back, he's taking over. And so there's the jealousy thing there.
Animosity,
as well.
You know, obsession. Right. You know. It feeds into who Mordo should be as a character more than what he is currently.
Yeah. Yeah. Devin, what do you think? Time dilation and basically Doctor Strange is fighting a god for 50 years, and that's how he levels up.
No, I like that, because the way the movie's currently set up, my impression was that they were in like a solid time loop. So they theoretically could have been doing it for thousands of years and no real change would have occurred.
Yes.
Right.
But I like this because it does. It resolves a lot of the problems with, you know, like, setting it in a previous time. Now we can come into the future. We finish with having brought all our story threads over and setting them up for the future.
Right.
My only kind of gripe, or rather thing we'd have to kind of plan around, is the fact that Doctor Strange doesn't get another like individual movie for a while. We have a lot of events take place, which means we're gonna have these threads just sitting there unresolved during some massive events within the MCU.
But then he's not there for a bunch of it.
Let's see, he has a very small bit in Thor Ragnarok, which is where my first problem would have came up, and I think I sent this to you and I said a lot of the issues that I would make, I would have had to have had his sequel before Infinity War. I would have had a sequel for Infinity War, so I see where Devin's coming from, because a lot of the stuff I wanted to change, Doctor Strange has to have two movies before Infinity War.
Yeah.
Because we have to get Mordo away from the door that I just created, and we have to get him reattached to Thor for Ragnarok for slightly a bit, and then we just have to have him being the Sorcerer Supreme in the New York Sanctum for when Hulk just destroys the ceiling and comes through it.
Yeah. I'm totally down to explore this pathway and see if there's like an organic way to relink it. But Patrick Willems did a great repitch on Winter Soldier that like we ended it and we were like, this is a much better movie. We have totally messed with the MCU.
It's really hard to say that about Winter Soldier because it's already such a good movie.
Oh, his change was like literally he changed one thing, but the ripple effect was like,
I know. I couldn't listen to it because I was offended that he thought that he needed to rescue Winter Soldier. No, yeah, I haven't listened to that one yet because I was so offended that he would think the audacity of him trying to change the Winter Soldier.
If you look at the range of movies that we've done on this podcast,
what a son of a bitch,
we go from like 10% on Rotten Tomatoes to like 90%.
Yeah, fuck you for a goofy movie, you ass.
That was so much fun.
Brandon's a fucking asshole. I had to watch straight to DVD Disney movies. Do you know how bad they are?
Oh, I am aware.
Yes.
Oh my god. And then I was like, the one of them I did appreciate, which is Aladdin 3, because in Aladdin 3, the hook of Aladdin 3 is Robin Williams is back as the voice of Genie.
Well, and if those of us with unresolved dad issues.
I want that. They're not unresolved. I have dad issues and I know my dad.
Right.
But you ever watch Fox and the Hound 2?
Ooh, no, and I won't. So thank you for that service.
You know the sacrifices I make for this damn podcast? I wanted to kill myself.
Scott, how are you feeling about the fixes that we've done so far? Do you want to run down this like path of how do we reconnect to the MCU, or do you like the idea of maybe leaving it a little ambiguous?
I think it's Chris from Scotland.
What did I say?
Is it Scott?
Did you say Scott? Scott from Chrisland. We have you on the line today.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. I am a Scot. I like this idea. And But I think like him being away for 50 years and coming back makes his character stronger for yes. Infinity War as well.
I agree.
Cause, like, I think like his characters, I think he's one of the best characters in Infinity War, which is surprising because his own movie yes. is kind of so-so.
Yes.
But like if he had gone into the Infinity War, you know, he's got this like he spent 50 years in the Dark Dimension. You know, it just yes. makes his character even stronger going forward, I think.
It makes a lot of the choices that he makes in Infinity War. Like, he's doing the shit with the time stone. I'm like, where the fuck did he learn that?
Right.
But if you have that 50-year passage, you're like, I bet you he learned how to really use that fucking time
stone. Yeah, he learned a lot.
Well, and they almost clue you into that in the movie, because there's probably the fifth or sixth death. Yeah. He has his shields up. He's actually fighting back to survive. Yep. And so again, if we don't know how long he was in there,
because time works differently in a dimension, and right, so you don't know. He could have technically been in there for 50 years, but the difference is that it didn't pass time on
it Earth. Didn't yeah, yeah it didn't which pass again, time anywhere else.
Explanation fixes all that. And right, again, a time yeah. it easiest way to do that, make it go to 20. Oh, he shows back up and it's 2016,
right?
But then we have a Peggy Carter situation, by the way, with Rachel McAdams' character.
Oh, yeah, because they can't hook back up 50 years later.
No, that reinforces
she's long gone.
That reinforces me making her Cleo, because let's say she does show up and she's like, no, I'm a different person and my name is Cleo. Look at the camera. And then it's just like, oh, but it's really – but then it's revealed later that it still is the same person.
She just acted like she didn't know
it. She's Dormammu's niece. She doesn't age. Boom, I fixed my own problem.
That sets up an interesting sequel.
Shit,
for
I make
sure.
Good movies. Why can't I write them down? Oh, ADHD, that's
right. Devin, based on the fixes we made, what's the most exciting part for you for this hypothetical movie?
I think probably the chance to have some real like horror elements in an MCU movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Absolutely.
Because this is definitely also the scenario where, for me, the best horror comes from, because you have a good story, and then the elements come out through it.
Right.
So.
Mike, if you were cutting a trailer for this movie, not the original Doctor Strange, but this version of the movie, what would that trailer look like?
It would be kind of like Strange is having nightmares, and the eyes of Dormammu are showing. And, you know, I would treat the mysticism as a question. You know, I would tease the setting, be like, 1967, and the Zodiac Killer has killed his third victim, and he's like, I gotta catch the Zodiac Killer. And then it's like, he's, you know, he's at sleep at night, and then all of a sudden he's having the dreams of Dormammu and all that. By the way, Mads Mikkelsen is the Zodiac Killer. I don't know if I mentioned that, but he would be the Zodiac Killer in this. Like, that's he's making sacrifices to Dormammu.
Oh, okay. No, you're nice. Retconning the Zodiac. Okay, that makes sense.
I'm telling you, I can make good movies. Just don't expect me to write them down.
No, I'm on board for that. So the opening scene is a Mad Mikkelsen kill.
Yes.
It's a horror movie. You start off with like a horror short film.
Yeah, and then it's like you see the sacrifice and then it burning and then disappearing. And then you're like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
But then the body's still there, but it's taking the soul.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, what the hell is going on? And then it's like, the Zodiac Killer is doing it. It's Strange laying in his bed. Flashes of Dormammu's eyes. He wakes up. Boom.
Yeah. So okay.
I wouldn't even talk about the mysticism in this movie, in this trailer. I would leave it as kind of like this question.
Okay.
What the hell is going on in this movie? Like, I want people to have... I like a trailer that leaves me with questions.
Yeah.
I like to be mind fucked, but by the time I get into the movie, I'm like, holy shit, they could have warned me about that. I don't like trailers that give me too much.
The similarly titled Doctor Sleep movie has a good trailer for, like, what is this movie?
I have no idea what that movie is, but I gotta fucking see it.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this list, like, here, Phase 4 of Marvel's universe is Black Widow, who gives a shit, The Eternals, Doctor Strange 2, Black Panther 2, Shang-Chi, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. In that, we have three, if the Eternals touch on it, three different chances to talk more about mysticism.
Yeah.
They did not need to go into the mysticism as much as they did in this movie. So leaning more into the horrifying aspects of Dormammu,
yeah,
would have been so much better. Because we have other chances to bring them up. Hell, even Iron Fist, for its shittiness, talks about mysticism in a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shit show with a white guy who doesn't know how to fucking fight at all. But, I mean, it seems like they told him, listen, you got to talk about the mysticism, Scott. And he's like, I want to make something scary as shit. We're dealing with Dormammu. And he's like, no, it can't be like that. We're trying to get kids to watch these movies. No fucking kid is going to see a movie called Doctor Strange. I tried to look at my son, who's seen every other MCU movie. I was like, I can watch Doctor Strange. He goes, no, ew. A doctor? Get out of here. It just doesn't happen. Like, I had to explain to him who the hell Doctor Strange was. And then when we left the movie theater after Infinity War and Endgame, I was like, do you watch Doctor Strange? It's the only one you haven't seen. He goes, no. I'm like, all right, man, I don't blame you.
They know their target audience.
He also did not want to see Thor Dark World. He fell asleep during it.
Yeah.
It's the shit.
I agree it's the worst one. I don't think it's as...
Watch it.
I've just watched it recently.
Which movie would you rather watch? Would you rather watch Thor Dark World or Suicide Squad?
Dark World. Easily.
Bitch. I'm going to get people back on DC. You know,
Suicide Squad's going to get its good sequel.
All right, Thor Dark World or the uncut version of Batman vs. Superman?
Probably Batman v. Superman.
I'm going to tell you one thing. I never thought I'd want to watch 3.5 hours of Batman and Superman, but holy shit, is that a good version of that movie?
Only because I think they do the effects better. Chris, how do you feel about this this repitch, about these rewrites?
Yeah, I like it. I like bringing in the Zodiac Killer. I hadn't even realized that was 1967 as well, so I thought that was a nice addition.
Yeah.
And I can see how you can then make it, it's more a movie about a yep. you know, like a cult of devil worshippers yep. as the bad guys rather than just bad wizards.
Right. So. On like first glance, exactly.
You're a wizard. Yeah. Oh, you're a Death Eater. I mean, nondescript villain wizard.
There's only one thing that I want to go back over, and it's a specific rabbit hole. All
right, here we go. I'm liking this.
I have an issue with how many times after the first Guardians that Marvel tried to like make. Oh, just put Motown classics in your movies and makes it better.
What the fuck is wrong with
There's
them?
Two in the beginning of this movie, and then it ends on one.
It ends on one, and he mentions two others during the goddamn movie.
And then Beyonce plays in the middle of it.
Yeah, Beyonce plays.
Which, like, it's a joke, sure. It's a throwaway thing.
Beyonce transcends music.
But my point is, after Guardians, they just keep trying to, like, put classic rock and Motown into the MCU, and it's like, no, just save that for Guardians. That's what I want it for.
Moon Knight's theme song is Fuel by Metallica, so get ready.
Jesus. I know, specific rabbit hole. That was, like, my big complaint with the movie was, like, oh, and now we switch into the big score. Okay, cool. This is oddly weird.
Yeah, that's one thing I thought about, the 67 setting as well, is like the music of the time yep. is like...
It allows for it.
You know, perfect. Pink Floyd, The Doors, Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
You know, there's so much great music that would have gone along with the psychedelic visuals and everything.
Yeah.
That it would have made the whole movie, you know, given yep. it that aesthetic.
Ironically, right. I just watched Starsky and Hutch, which is the same type of situation where they lean heavy into that setting of the yep. 70s. It just fits.
Yeah, yeah, it works. Yeah. I like it. I like a period piece in the MCU too.
I do kind of love that because it's based in this time period. There's like throughout the entire movie, there's going to be like, you know, a 40% chance Strange is just tripping balls the whole time.
Right.
Yes, and that's the thing. We could make him make these little, like, what the fuck was. Did you give me acid? But no one ever answers him about it.
He mentions that in the first astral projection scene. Yes. He's like, what did you give me? LSD?
Yeah.
Whatever. It would be way funnier if that scene was played as like, all right, I've done LSD before. Yeah. You can't like, fool me.
Listen, that was LSD. I know it. I went to college. You know, just,
right.
It's, oh my God, that's why. As soon as I read the first grievance and his rescue, which was 1967, my brain exploded.
Yeah.
I was like, I have just made a way better Doctor Strange movie in my head than what was made.
Right.
And I suck at making movies like that. I was like, oh, that's way better.
Yeah. I love it. Chris, like,
I just looked this up as well online, and The Doors released the album Strange Days in 1967.
Oh, my God. All right. Come on, Chris. All right. Hire Chris to write. You know what? Call Kevin Feige or Feige or whatever his last name is and tell him we're remaking Doctor Strange.
What? Okay, what if he time stones back into the 60s for the sequel, though?
Shit!
Not a bad idea, right?
No. It's got to be the first movie or nothing.
No, that's perfect. I love that. That's when you know the pitch is good, when there's something to back it up. The same thing happened when I did the, Devin, you remember when I did the Indiana Jones Crystal Skull rewrite? And just, like, there was so many things happening the year that I set it in that I was like, nope, it's perfect. This is exactly what they should have done.
Okay, boys, I just looked up something. I looked up something from Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah?
The villain is Nightmare. We might actually get the horror Doctor Strange we want.
Explain for the non-comic book
fans.
So
Nightmare is a demonic entity that is a Dormammu follower, but he resides in the dream dimension. So his entire purpose of being is he haunts dreams, and it allows him to gain power. So essentially take Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
That's essentially what Nightmare is. Except Nightmare was made before Freddy Krueger, and so...
All right, bitch!
God damn it! Son of a bitch! No, so we might actually get a sequel that has more of that horror element because of Nightmare being in it.
I'm down for that. Absolutely.
I'd be dope.
Yeah, watch the shit out of that.
I think there's like there's a Doctor Strange animated movie as well. I think I think maybe Nightmare is the bad.
He's in that. He's in that. I think. Yeah.
And like that's way scarier than this movie. So.
Oh, here's a great one for you. Here's a little IMDb trivia for you. Apparently, Nightmare was supposed to be in the first movie, so that goes back to my little nightmare, little having dreams thing.
Yeah.
So Scott Derrickson definitely wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing someone at Marvel didn't want it to happen. For the first movie.
I think after Shazam, we're going to see a shift.
Oh, my God.
Where they're going to be like, all right, yeah, we can lean into this a little bit.
Remember,
we'll go there.
Remember when I told you? Remember my bold prediction was Aquaman was going to start it, but Shazam was going to be the best movie in DC Universe. Remember when I told you that? I literally said that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally right.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I'm on board. I'm working on a video essay about it right
also
now.
Also, easiest fucking character to do that with in the DC Universe.
Right, for sure. Chris.
Yes.
If you had to give us your top three MCUs,
this is like a
BuzzFeed personality test, right?
What's your three favorite and also the three worst?
But I'm gonna put it on hard mode. You can't pick an Avengers movie. It has to be an individual.
Funny. Wait, does that mean we can't include Captain America Civil War? I mean, it's not if it's on your top three, then I lose all respect for you, but is it technically an Avengers movie? Technically?
No, I'd leave Civil War in play. Okay. Anything that has Avengers in the title, you can't pick. So individual movies, top three. What are you going to go with?
Ooh. I'm judging you.
Okay, so taking out Endgame, because I think that's probably the best. But
I honestly agree with
that aside, I think Winter Soldier is still probably the best.
Yep.
The first Guardians movie.
Okay.
And Ragnarok.
Okay.
Yes, Ragnarok. Oh, thank God. Yeah. I was scared. I was waiting for, like, Guardians Volume 2. I'm like, God damn it, that movie sucks.
Doesn't suck.
It sucks.
You're wrong.
It's on the limit.
You're
on my worst.
Not correct on
Iron
that.
Man
no,
3.
No, that's a good list.
Those three movies as well, they were all like a gear shift.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, in going from the Avengers into Winter Soldier, it was just like total change of gears. And for the Thor movies, Ragnarok is just like
that's not
something
what you were expecting
completely
from the
different
next Thor movie.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And Guardians, Guardians are very serious. Like, Star-Lord's, like, very proudful in the comics.
Yeah.
And he took that thing in a completely different direction. And in the first movie, it pays off. I'm sorry, Seth.
No,
the
you're
second
wrong.
Movie, it's just not as good.
The second movie is fantastic.
Yeah, like, he's totally right. Those are, like, set points.
Yeah.
Like, those three movies are the set. Besides Endgame.
Well, that's their lesson, right? Their lesson is, whenever you let directors go a new style, a new flavor, a new path, that people get into it.
FYI, he would have mentioned two Russo Brother movies on that list, because Winter Soldier and Endgame. Russo Brothers know what the hell they're doing.
True. Devin, what about you? If you had to pick three non-Avengers Marvel movies to be your top three.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out my third. I agree on Ragnarok. I think Ragnarok is one of my favorites just because it is fantastic in so many ways.
Yeah.
So
different.
It combines so many different story arcs from the comics. Yeah. It makes it perfect.
Yeah. I'm putting Black Panther on there purely for Michael B. Jordan and Andy Serkis in that movie. The third one is where I struggle. I bounce around a lot in this, like going through trying to think if there's anything that,
it's hard.
It's difficult. For sure.
Okay. I'm going to do this third one, not because I think it's one of the best made movies, but because it speaks to my childhood.
Yeah, one you love.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
Yeah. The Baba Yaga. You and I cracked up so hard.
I think I even said to Seth, I was like, I'm not seeing this movie in theaters. And then I saw it when it came out on Blu-ray. I rented it at Redbox. And I was like,
damn, I wish I had seen that in theaters.
That is a fun fucking movie.
It
Why
is,
do I
it
keep
is.
Doing
it's
this?
So fun.
So fun.
It's and
so fun
and I love it because growing up, you know, they always had like the little Ant-Man comics in the back of other comics. And those were often my favorite things.
Yeah.
So to see like that brought to screen in a way that works and isn't ridiculous was great.
And I had so many gripes with the first Ant-Man movie just because of Edgar Wright being thrown off of that.
Oh, yeah.
But this movie was, loved Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. Like if that's why I think I have to see Black Widow, because I can't trust it, because I didn't trust Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it turned out to be a phenomenal film.
Right.
So it's like what the MCU has done is they've made even their movies that should be pointless to you, things you want to watch.
Yeah.
Because
they're
entertaining. And I like that.
What about you, Mike? If you non-Avengers.
Non-Avengers, I agree with him at Black Panther. And it's because of what Ryan Coogler does to Marvel's villains.
Yeah.
He gave Killmonger rationale, reasoning, and sympathy.
Yeah.
He did something that's not really done in the MCU at all, which is, oh my God, I actually am sad that Killmonger is dead.
Right.
Also pisses me off because Marvel doesn't know how to stop killing fucking villains. But they built a world with Black Panther that wasn't there before. And then, of course, I love Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I love Winter Soldier to death. I think it's got some of the best action scenes in any Marvel movie. The fighting and Sebastian Stan shines as the Winter Soldier, and to see Cap go through the conflict.
Oh, yeah.
It's character development that wasn't really there at Marvel. Like, I had been shitting on them for years about how shitty their character development is because they let Joss Whedon make fucking movies for them. That guy made 8 seasons of a fucking show and had no character development. He sucks.
That's what shows
him.
Do.
I hate him.
That period in TV shows was not great.
And then, of course, I think I got to go Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
It's just... It's like it's on Netflix, and every now and then I'm like, yeah, sure. Why the hell not?
Sure.
Like, Taika Waititi is attached to the Akira movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. I don't give a shit what you do with that. I'm going to see that anyway, because what you did with that is you took Planet Hulk, you took the Ragnarok storyline, you took 3 different storylines.
Yeah.
Combined them into one and made easily one of my favorite movies to just be like, I want to have a good time and watch a 80s-esque movie, because that's what that is. Like an 80s movie.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah. That's my top 3.
Yeah. Not that anybody is going to ask, but...
Yeah, no one cares, Seth. Shut the hell up.
I've got one from each phase.
Guardians Volume 2, Iron Man 3.
I've got one from each phase. Was Volume 2 in Phase 2 or Phase 3?
I'm looking it up. I think it's Phase 2.
I know Guardians 1 was Phase 2. Yeah. I can't keep these movies straight
anymore. I can't
fucking
type. That's my problem now.
I can't keep them straight.
Michael Nolan, you need Volume 2, right?
I do mean Volume 2.
Volume 2 is Phase 3.
Okay, I don't have one from every phase. But I do have one from Phase 1.
Okay.
Equally shocking. Captain America, the First Avenger.
I was waiting on it.
It's... I feel like...
It's a good start.
Oh, man. It's so... Have you guys seen Rocket Man? Have you guys seen that old?
Yeah, of course, I've fucking seen Rocket Man.
Not the new Elton John movie. The Rocketeer. The Rocketeer is what I mean. I'm sorry. The Rocketeer.
Yeah, I've seen the Rocketeer.
I meant the Rocketeer.
Don't you fucking insult me.
No. The Rocketeer. The same guy that directed that directed Captain America. And you can tell the difference between the late 80s, early 90s to that. when he got his hands on the technology to make his movies look the way he wanted, he went balls to the wall. That movie is so, like, you could show that movie in theaters in, like, the 1950s, you're and people would be like, that's amazing! Yeah. I love that movie!
Well, there was talk after that first Avengers movie of making a new Rocketeer with him attached to it again. I would watch
I'd watch it.
I totally agree with you about that. It's a good movie.
Guardians 2 is in my top three. I know Mike hates it.
Damn it, I hate that.
every time I watch it, I get a little bit more out of it, too.
I get a little bit pissed off more!
For James Gunn to make the final... for James Gunn to make the final joke that basically it's just going to be like a CGI joke, or the final fight be a joke. It's a big CGI.
So fucking funny.
It's hilarious, but there's also intensely personal moments happening within it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yondu dying. Ooh.
I think it has some of the best inter-character development of. Yeah,
ham-fisted piece of shit. No. Scooby-Doo level bullshit.
No.
No. Okay, Michael, I think you're alone on this.
I'll give you that one.
The plot sucks.
The plot is Scooby-Doo. I think it's. He also wrote two Scooby-Doo movies.
He wrote both the live-action Scooby-Doo movies, guys. Keep that in mind.
So, but the second one's self-aware and fun.
Yeah, sure.
It is. Give it a rewatch. It's.
I just can't, and I think the thing that pissed me off about Guardians, I'm so pissed off, I can't talk. Guardians Volume 2 is the misuse of Kurt Russell.
Misuse.
Ego is a shitty villain to begin with.
Oh, yeah, he's a bad idea as a villain in that movie as a character looking for a surrogate dad.
And also, it's a throwaway. It's such a throwaway from Guardians Volume 1. Wait, let me get to where my throwaway is. Guardians Volume 1. Guardians you're 1. Something special. Your dad's an ancient. Volume 2. Oh, your dad's dead. Who fucking cares? You're no longer anything special. It just, they throw away something that they could have trapped in and done something more with. And that's what pisses me off about Guardians Volume 2. And also, there's a lot of cheese to that movie. There's a lot of predictability with the plot devices. Like, as soon as all the conflict with, oh my God, why the hell am I blanking on, Killen's character. Why am I blanking on her sister's
Nebula.
Name? Thank you, Nebula. No. I'm like blanking on her name. When Nebula's, I was like, all right, she's going to go take it and she's going to go try and fight her fucking sister again and then they're going to resolve it. Boom, that's exactly what fucking happened. Yes,
but
it was fun to watch.
That's what we wanted to happen.
But that's the thing. These movies aren't about what we want. These movies should be about advancing stories in a great way that adds entertainment to it. And I don't think that movie did it for me.
I
also fucking hate James Gunn a lot because Brightburn is a... I fucking hate that movie.
He didn't even make Brightburn.
Brightburn's
his. His brother and cousin wrote it, and then someone else directed it.
No,
he produced on it. All he did was put the money into it. That's
Brightburn
not...
Brightburn is a shit film, too.
Hey, what's your third, Seth?
Yeah, what's your third?
I'll make the unanimous agreement. Thor Ragnarok is
because
it's so different. It's so weird. It's so funny. It's so great.
There's like nothing to hate about that movie. You walk out just like
there isn't.
And it's got the freaking Hawk joke. So
yes,
the movie.
It's got so many.
We've never had more good Hulk than we did in Thor Ragnarok.
We've never had more good Thor.
That's true.
Than
also
we
true.
Did in Thor Ragnarok. No.
The Shakespeareanness of the first two is a direct result of the director. The end of Thor Dark World, specifically his mom dying and his brother dying within like 20 minutes of each other.
Yes.
That was like his killer sad stuff.
That was an incredible ending to his arc.
Yeah.
And then of course he finds out he has a sister that he never knew, and so of course
right.
he has to deal with that. And then of course his brother still being his brother.
Right.
And then literally the next movie, his brother's dead. Thor has such, and his character arc really starts to shine because of Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok makes Thor Dark World better.
Oh yeah.
It's so good.
Endgame makes Dark World better.
Yeah.
Every part of Thor Ragnarok improves everything that it reinforces around it.
Yeah.
And there is, like, Taika Waititi can make any fucking movie he wants right now. Like, that is what he did. He combined the silliness of Marvel with gravitas, with darkness, and with great action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And made it perfect.
That's what he, that's what he's so good at too.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yes. Like, I am so excited to see what he does next. Like, he combined literally Secret Wars.
Do you want to know what he's doing next?
Planet Hulk. I know what he's doing next. He combined Planet Hulk.
Not Akira.
And he combined Ragnarok. He also, he made What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show.
Oh yeah.
Holy shit, that's funny. Also, he cast Matthew Berry in that, Matt Berry in that, and he is, Matt Berry is still one of my favorite people ever since the IT Crowd. When
he's
just comes into the screen, Father! Oh my God. And it's, what is Taika doing? Oh, by the way, another thing to talk about with, and this is sad. I really hope the Suicide Squad is a little bit more horror and a little bit more graphic, because he also made the Belko Experiment.
Yeah.
Which, I know you've seen that movie.
Yeah.
That movie has no right to be that fucking good.
Well, he wrote it. He didn't direct it.
No, he wrote and produced it.
Yeah.
Which, for me, writing a movie,
it's a big part of it,
is
for sure.
A big, huge part of it. And honestly, it depends on what level of producing you do. You can actually have a big voice if you're a producer.
True.
If you're a producer.
The next thing Taika Waititi is doing, I don't know if you guys have read up on his future projects. He's got a movie coming out, I think, later this year or early next year.
This year.
It's called Jojo Rabbit.
Yep.
And Taika Waititi is going to play Hitler.
Motherfucking Hitler.
Oh,
in,
no.
Yes.
Oh, that's so good.
And I'm totally like, you know, the funny thing is, Taika Waititi is a white guy. Everyone's getting pissed off. But because he's just this, I'm like, oh.
Well, he's a partially Aboriginal New Zealander,
yes,
isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's,
yeah.
Not, he's not full white.
He's not,
I hope he doesn't change his accent either. I hope he gets a full New Zealand accent as Hitler.
Have you seen this fucking cast list, too?
Like, ScarJo.
ScarJo's in it. Some no-name. Thomasin McKenzie's in it. Sam Rockwell's in it. Rebel Wilson's in it. Stephen Merchant's in it. And Alfie Allen is in it.
It's going to be, I'm Holy going to bust shit. A gut watching that movie, for sure. I gotta end this show, though. Chris, would you come back on to rescue Dark World with me?
Oh shit! I want to be there for that.
Oh yeah, okay. I'll rewatch that and come up with some ideas.
You don't
come
you
up
don't.
With some. He's gonna send us a fucking book
right.
of ideas.
The next email is gonna have multiple pages.
He's like,
send this in different parts, guys.
I had to send this in a Word doc.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. You don't have to do the whole thing, but if you want to rewatch and come up with some ideas, I'd love to have you back on. And that's my dream.
That's
rescue.
The Avengers Assemble right there.
Yeah,
saving the shittiest movie in the MCU.
That's a big gun. I'd love to pull you in for that one.
That big gun.
Okay, that sounds good.
I
had some thoughts on Far From Home. I know you've not seen it yet, but
yeah, don't spoil
Far
it for
From
me.
Home.
Yeah.
I thought was good, but
I there's... just want to talk to you about Far From Home for the next 7 hours. I love that fucking
movie. So. I hope you had a good time. I really appreciate you
great.
Sending an email in and coming on the show. We've been kind of emailing back and forth for the last, two weeks, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
I love it when people take the time. You're like an obvious reason
intelligent super fan that we love.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, you're an obvious reason why you should just write into the show.
Yes, just
I'm getting
write
into,
us.
I'm getting into the plugs.
You're absolutely right. Write us.
Right in. You could be just like Chris, maybe not quite as cool, but
he's
close.
He's pretty dope.
I should have said right at the start, because I think the episode that I listened to, you did this plug.
Yeah,
at the start of the episode rather than the end.
I'm gonna recut in a plug at the beginning as well.
Yeah,
it's a little easier. Not everybody listens through to the very very end, but some people do.
I think I got a new idea that we should also do.
I'll put it in both places. But filmrescueshow@gmail.com.
Yes,
if you want to be like Chris,
yes,
write us. We'll fix a movie with you. Awesome. This was so much fun. We crushed it.
Yeah, I'm gonna send out a little riposte for anyone who actually does listen to what Seth tells me. People listen to Michael's film, whatever. Send me 3 movies to review, and I'll rip them the fuck apart.
Oh hell yeah!
Send it to me. I'll rip them the fuck apart.
Also on Twitter, Film Rescue Show is our handle. If you want to give us a shout out, if you want to communicate with us at all, that's the way to go. The other thing that we're running hard with right now, if you go on iTunes or iTunes Podcast, and you go to the Film Rescue Show.
Oh, yeah. How are we doing with that?
We're doing great. People are leaving 5-star reviews. The 5-star reviews help us get suggested along with other big film podcasts. It's how we grow. You can literally help us grow for free just by giving us a 5-star review. But I've added a little bonus prize of if you leave a review and it's crazy, if it just, you didn't even have to be about the show. Just leave me some insane shit to read at the end of the podcast. I'll do it. I'll read it. It's going to happen. And then the only other thing I want to plug is our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Montressor Media. That's growing. We've got a podcast specifically for Patreon every single 2 weeks. Where you get content that is not available on streaming. You can, for just $1, get it on there. That's all my plugs. Chris, dude, thank you so much for coming on
the
show.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks, guys.
Find Chris on Tinder.
thank you, Michael.
Devin.
My wife will love that.
Oh, right. Shit. He's not on Tinder. He's on Grindr. I mean, shit, that's even worse.
Devin, Michael, thank you guys for hosting with me. This has been the Film Rescue Show. We just rescued Doctor Strange. Tune in next time for The Last Airbender.
Oh, no! That movie sucks!